37. My girlfriend sucked 37 dicks.
In a row?
NovaStream.com.au and the Pop Culturist present In A Row, an 8-week spotlight on one of the kings of indie film, Kevin Smith, starting from 1994 with Clerks to 2014's Tusk, along with the glimpse into his future projects. I'm one of your hosts, I'm Ryan. Along with me, I have Alistair from NovaStream.
Bye.
And Dylan, another host from NovaStream. You'll see him in The Marvelous Show as well as DC Domination. How are you, Dylan?
Good, thank you.
Excellent. So what we plan to do with this show is over the next 8 weeks, we'll take a look at approximately 2 movies per week in a lead up to when Kevin Smith comes over to Australia to do the Jay and Silent Bob Get Old tour. And hopefully, if we go all good, we can score an interview with the man himself. Now, with NovaStream taking a look in towards the indie side of things, we thought let's have a look at one of the pioneers of indie film in the 90s. So this week we're looking at Kevin Smith's first film, Clerks, and his follow-up with Mallrats. Now, we're also taking a couple of different approaches. Now, myself, I am a big diehard Kevin Smith fan, so that's my angle. I'm coming through as not a blind fan, but coming in as 100% passion. We've got Dylan, who he's seen the films, not a massive fan, but he's there. And then we've got Alistair.
He's there. I exist.
Yeah. He's the fence sitter in this. And then we've got Alistair, someone who's never seen any of these films, and he's approaching them for the first time. So let's kick things off with Clerks. Clerks came out in 1994. It stars Brian O'Halloran as Dante Hicks and Jeff Anderson as Randall Graves. And it shows a day in the life of two store clerks and the people that they deal with throughout the day. The movie is set up into 9 scene breaks, each signifying a ring of hell. Now, this film was true independent. It was shot for a total of $27,575 in a convenience store that Kevin Smith himself worked at. But upon its theatrical release, it did gross over $3 million. The entire film is shot in black and white, just due to budget restraints. And yeah, so Kevin Smith himself, in true indie fashion, actually was able to fund it by selling a large portion of his extensive comic book collection, as well as maxing out somewhere between 8 to 10 credit cards.
That's awesome. I love that story.
It's a really, really cool story. It's like you just saw that full-on dedication. So the original idea came from, he went up to Vancouver to start a film, like a film course. He went about 6 months in and realized, you know what, I'm going to get much more out of this if I just go and make a film. So he flew back to New Jersey, started writing Clerks, and then a little bit later, they started filming. And now this was shot over a total of 21 days, flat, all at night, obviously due to the trading hours of the store. But that's it. It came out as this foul-mouthed little black and white indie film that had a lot of people raving at the time. But almost 20 to 25 years later, you know, Alistair, you've watched it for the first time. What did you think coming into this film?
Well, the only thing I know of Kevin Smith is that he was in the Mindy Project for one episode and he was really funny. and that is my extent of him, apart from he used to be really fat and now he's less fat. so I don't really have an opinion on him. So this, for me, was like going in to see any movie that I've never seen before. I had no preconception, no anything. I loved that it was in black and white. I actually really liked it, and I don't care if it came from a budget perspective. It actually worked.
Well, yeah, so in terms of like the knowledge side of things, it also came from the idea of budgets, and with all the fluorescent lighting in the store itself, it was really difficult to shoot. So it just sort of worked in a good favor, I guess.
I think my favorite scene, though, is definitely the first one. Just even the sheet with the security shutters saying, "I assure you, we're open." Like, I loved that as kind of an opener to the movie. And I did like, I thought the females in this were really, like, how do I say this? The females in this were really well written. they weren't clumsy or stupid or...
So they were strong and powerful.
Mm,
especially, you know, Marion Gigliotti's character.
Yeah, she was my favorite. Like, my favorite character, actually, in the whole movie.
Yeah.
But that's just me, personally.
Yeah.
What about you, Dylan?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Kevin Smith's movies. In particular, like you said there, Ryan, it is a legendary tale unto itself of how he got it made. And he was one of those people who kind of came up in the early 90s with Quentin Tarantino and Richard Linklater and Robert Rodriguez in the indie wave. Clerks in particular is, well, with a lot of Kevin Smith's movies, or really all of them, they're an amalgam of all the things he loved growing up. So yeah. You can see influences from everything that he loves. And a lot of those things are things that I love as well. Like, he talks about how when he worked at the store, he'd watch Batman the Animated Series in the mornings on Saturday mornings and Degrassi Junior High, which are both things that I love as well. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the influences go into this film in particular, like... it brings a kind of self-awareness that people talk like the people I knew. Like, they're not characters, they're real people. They talk about movies and they quote movies. And
like it's very reminiscent to that first scene in Reservoir Dogs, like where they, you know, where they talk about Madonna's song. It's like that, you know, it makes it feel like it exists in this world.
Exactly. Like, it's a real world setting. You never really catch people talking or referencing other things, whether it's not something that people were interested in before, or whether it's a cross between actors being in things and it breaks the reality of the movie they're trying to make. And it was about, you know, what it's like being 22 and not having any direction and being stuck at your job and hating it and feeling like your potential is going to waste and there's something you want to do. So it was always something that I could relate to. And it was like a snapshot of people at that stage of their life.
Yeah, it's a perfect visual representation of a lot of, I wouldn't even say, I probably could say quarter-life crises, I guess. Like, you know, in your early 20s, not sure what you're supposed to do with the rest of your time. Either you've just come out of school and you're just doing a counter, you know, behind-the-counter job. It's, yeah, like, I'm in the same boat as you. When I saw this film for the first time, like, mind you, I'm pretty sure I saw Clerks 2 first before I saw Clerks. Actually, I think I saw Jay and Silent Bob first, but whatever. I think it really encapsulated who I was at this time. And that's something that I really love about Kevin Smith's films. They speak to me on such a personal level. When I saw this, I was working at a McDonald's. Like, it was just the most redundant, dead-end job, and I hated every day. And that, you know, it's just like the idea of, like, I should be better than this. And
the idea of dealing with stupid customers with their dumb questions is something that just rings too true with the
with everyone. How much
is this anyway? Or yeah. Do you have any new movies in? Like, this job would be great if it wasn't for the fucking customers, is exactly right.
Mm. Yeah, but yeah, I think that's sort of what fit with it, because with the 90s sort of brought the uprising of like this slacker generation, you know, well, with obviously Richard Linklater's Slacker, which is a direct inspiration to this film itself. But yeah, I think it sort of really encapsulated a good time period. And it's something, oddly enough, that's relatable across different, you know, 20, 25 years later.
But looking back at the movie, it feels more like a series of sketches at times, like with the title cards, like you're saying, to break it up. So it's like short vignettes rather than an overall story.
Mm.
And like the vignettes were great, or some of them at least, like the conversation about how many people you've slept with and every time we kiss, I'm going to taste 36 other dicks and try not to suck any dick on the way through the parking lot.
Easily one of the best lines in that film.
Amazing. Yeah. And the guy, of course, scaring people away from buying cigarettes and then, you know, everybody ganging up against him only to realize that he's a Chewy's chewing gum salesman was just classic. But yeah, all the vignettes were really good. That's what I enjoyed. But I don't know if it worked as an overall story. It comes from the Quentin Tarantino kind of school of things happening off screen that they talk about, like events that have happened and things that have happened. And if you're not paying close attention, it's hard to follow who died, who was in the swimming pool, who went to the funeral, who was dead at the funeral. Like, they talk about a lot of characters' names, and if you're not paying full attention, it's hard to grasp who they're talking about or what's going on.
Mm. But at the same time, it lays a groundwork for, as you know, if you follow it on, what will become a universe. But even then, yeah, initially, if you're not paying 100% attention, you could get lost.
Well, exactly. It was building that viewer's universe that Kevin Smith kind of built upon with his silent Silent Bob and Jay characters.
Mm.
And yeah, obviously now shared universes are a huge thing. So he was bringing that actually from the comic books of like Marvel comics where things cross over, and that's what they're actually doing in the films now. So it's an interesting juxtaposition to the way we deal with movies now.
Mm. But yeah, so in terms of like, for me, with the characters was a really big thing. As you mentioned, Alistair, with, you know, each character sort of did have a different look, and some were really, really strong characters. Like, you know, Dante was sort of the Weasley, sort of whiny character. He was like, oh, I'm not supposed to be, everyone's against me, this is ruining for me. Where, you know, which something, oddly enough, at that time I could relate to, and I sort of had to change my ways because of it. But then there's Randall, and Randall's the guy that we want to be. When I worked behind a register, I wanted to be that guy that didn't give two shits and would tell a customer where to go. Mm-hmm. And not have any remorse.
Yeah.
I wish I could be him. But, yeah, then all those little side characters come in. For the life of me, I've blanked out on Marion Gigliotti's character's name. Yeah, I blanked out.
Veronica.
Veronica, there we go. Yeah, so, yeah, Veronica was a really, 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 really strong character. Sadly, she never appears again, but I think she was great. But yeah, we've approached it as a sort of a symbol as a movie. But what do we think of the movie itself critically? Like, you know, as if you would approach it as a review style thing. Let's open up to either of you.
It's hard to, because it's a different time. It's hard to look at it. Like, it wasn't bad, but I don't think it was like, you know, groundbreakingly brilliant.
Looking back at it, having not seen it for many, many years, and it came out, what, 1994? So it's been a long time now. A lot of it comes down to the time that it came out in. Like, people weren't doing this. Pop culture references weren't a thing back then. Like, The Simpsons were starting to do it. Seinfeld was starting to do it. And so, like, with their construction of the Death Star conversation and the Jaws references and the Indiana Jones references in the movie, that's something that's massive now. Like, Community is just a show built around that. Family Guy's a show built around that. So you've got to kind of look at it in the spectrum of when it came out. And for the budget that it was made on, the way that it was made on, Kevin Smith has a clear voice and he has a knack for witty dialogue and interesting conversations. So you could see what it had, the appeal that it had that put it on the map. And you can see the talent in there that he would go on and develop as he went along in his career. So looking at it in that sense, I'd still do enjoy it. Watching it back recently, I'd enjoy Clerks more, and I could really see like jokes that I didn't get when I was younger when I first watched it, and adult things that are in it now that I have a better understanding of, and kind of saw the relationship clicks, having had further relationships in my life that I can kind of really relate to, and the turmoils that brings to it. So yeah, I think it's a good movie. It's not for everyone, of course. It is black and white, which is a barrier that
and
a lot
filthy.
Of people have.
And yeah. Filthy.
And yeah, especially in the magazine scene. I don't know how they kept that in the movie. That would have made it like an instant X rating where he kind of stares away the guy that is played by Paul Flanagan, one of the many.
Well, that's one of the things, but one of the other stories of this film is it was rated NC-17, which is the highest rating you can receive in America, but it didn't... Normally, most movies receive that for violence and, you know, and blood and gore, but this movie received it purely on swears. 91 F-bombs.
There were a lot.
Yeah. I'm in the same boat. I seeing Jay and Silent Bob and Clerks 2 first, it was really weird to come back to it initially when I was younger to sort of approach a movie black and white. I didn't really get a lot of it. But coming back now as more of an adult, and I've seen and done more, and as you mentioned, Dylan, like I've had more relationships with people, you can sort of see those things. It just sort of like that level of friendship between Dante and Randall, even though, you know, Dante believes that Randall is a bad influence and someone that's sort of bringing him and holding him down. But there's still that strong level of friendship when, you know, Randall makes that comment. It's like, if, you know, it's essentially like, if you hurt him, I'm going to kill you to the girl coming, which I think is just a lovely little sentiment.
Mm.
But yeah, so that's it. Sorry. It's a great start to a career, but the hard part is when you start so strong, everyone's asking, what's the next movie you're going to make? And what Kevin Smith came up after that was what would be his first studio film, which was Mallrats. So that was made with Universal, and it follows Brody Bruce, played by Jason Lee, and T.S. Quint, played by Jeremy London. So two guys who were dumped by their girlfriends on the same day, and in order to deal with their loss, they go hang out at a local mall, and that's pretty much what happens. And then it's just a series of events from after that. Now, this one is pretty much critically bashed. Not anyone sort of loved it there. It's a movie that sort of gained its popularity once home video started and started picking up from there. Now, throughout the years, Kevin Smith has 100% been one of the people to bash it as hard as anybody else. But, a lot of people either love or hate this film. Dylan, what's your stance on Mallrats?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of things I fondly remembered about Mallrats, and again, it is that mix of all the things that Kevin Smith loves. So there's the kryptonite condom speech, which supposedly got him the gig on the Superman Lives script.
True.
All the obvious references to Batman, the Wolverine snickety berserker chat, Silent Bob trying to use the Force all the time. So as a whole, I still to this day don't know who the main character is. I guess they're both the main character, Brody and Quint, because Brody seems to be the one that's driving the story, but Quint seems to be the main character. But
yeah,
neither of them kind of take front and center. And the fact that their names are, of course, Brody and Quint, like Roy Schneider and Robert Shaw in Jaws. So there's that Jaws love again. And I was one of those kids who, after finishing school, would hang out at the mall or the supermarket with your friends before going home, because it was the only place at that age that you had that wasn't your parents' house. There are a lot of things to like, but it does drag in a lot of spots, and scenes go on for way longer than they need to, and it just kind of meanders until it gets to the kind of point of the story. So they break up at the start, things happen, they meet random aside characters, and then there's the kind of date show at the end where things kind of come together, but it takes a long time to get there.
Mm.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like, this is probably one of the films that I relate to the least. As I wasn't someone that tend to hang out in malls growing up, even, you know, I just didn't do it. It wasn't my thing. So I couldn't sympathize with these characters. And, you know, at that time, sadly, I was single most of my teen years, so I didn't really have the heartbreak side of it as well. But as I grew up and became more of a big fan of comics and pop culture, this movie is better for it. Like, when you watch it, I'm like, oh, all these, you know, little, you know, Wolverine references and things that you wouldn't have picked up the first time. It makes it even better. Now, this movie is jam-packed. He's like, a lot of names appear in this. The names that you, at the time, you know, some were prominent, some weren't, but were later on to become bigger people. So you've got Ben Affleck. I think one of the major films he did before this was Dazed and Confused. You've had Jason Lee, who's done nothing before it, who, you know, now has moved on to bigger and better things.
Pro skater.
Yeah, he was a pro skater at the time. This is his, yeah, straight into film. Ethan Suplee, who became his co-star in My Name is Earl.
Really?
Yeah, so
Randy,
yes.
To his Earl, yeah.
Yeah, so the guy that played Willem, who was staring at the magic eye, him and Jason Lee will go on to later on to make My Name is Earl. And Michael Rooker playing the love interest father. Who's now in The Walking Dead.
At the time. Yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy, of course.
Yeah.
And, of course, Stan Lee himself made a cameo.
That was pretty big to get him in there.
Well, at the time, nobody knew outside of comics who Stan Lee really was. But that was the one thing that stood out for me when I remember it, and still does today, where he comes and gives him this sage advice and tells him this incredibly sweet story about the girl who got away. And it is a really nice performance, and he's like everything you'd ever dream him to be, like this warm, sincere, wise, kind of guy. Even though, watching it back now, when he's at the storefront, he's clearly like reading cue cards off the side of the screen as he's talking. The second part of the scene where he's doing the story is like really good and genuine, but that first part is terrible where he's like clearly reading off cue cards.
What about you, Alistair? What did you think of watching Mallrats the first time?
I was bored shitless. The honest truth, I found this to be a typical, and this is going to sound bad, but it's the truth, a typical follow-up to a when an indie person makes a hit film, they get studio money and studio interference, and I just didn't like it.
Mm.
I didn't relate to it. I didn't find it interesting. None of the characters interested me. Stan Lee surprised me. I was like, oh, I didn't know that. Okay, cool. Ben Affleck
was in it.
Was his suit meant to fit him? Is the joke that he works at this fashionable male store, but he wears a suit that's way too big for him? Or is it just they didn't get a proper fitting suit for him? I never thought that.
That may have been the trend at the time.
I took it up as the joke. I thought it was a joke. But then I thought the whole movie was a joke. I just couldn't find any redeeming factors here. I didn't find it funny, apart from the suit thing that I giggled at. I don't know. I just didn't like it. And I didn't understand how you could go from Clerks to this. I didn't see the shared... Because it's meant to be shared universe, right?
Well, yeah, so the funeral that they attend in Clerks is the funeral of the girl they mentioned at the start of Morats who died in the swimming pool. That's the connection.
Well, I thought it was a more obvious connection.
Yeah, like it's subtle.
Yeah, I thought it would be more obvious.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I just don't like Jason Lee, so I think that probably...
Oh, okay. Help. So I was going to say, for me, one of the redeeming features of this is the performance from Jason Lee. Someone coming from a no-acting background, like, I felt his performance was really genuine. He didn't feel stunted in his delivery. I thought he was really, really good. I thought he was great. Shannon Doherty, I'm not really a big fan of to begin with, so she was all right. Jeremy London was okay. I don't know what he's done since, but he was reasonably good.
He's appeared many times in my dreams.
I find it funny. I think there's a lot of little things in this that are really, really clever and really good. Sort of those through jokes, you know, like I think Stink Palm is still to this day a hysterical idea. I love, when you like to do someone in an uncomfortable place, like the back of a Volkswagen. It's not a very strong joke, but it still gets me a little bit of a smirk every time I hear it. I can certainly see why people would shit on this movie, but I don't think it's horrendous either.
Did you see that they stole the stink palm in Dumber Dumber 2?
Did they really?
Yeah, it was something very similar.
Yeah. I know, I haven't seen that film, so.
No, there you go. One of the things that I didn't get and still don't get is a sense of how all these people knew each other. Like, do these people know each other from high school or hanging out at the mall? Because Brody seemed to like introduce each character kind of to the audience. But also at the same time, it was like TS is meeting them for the first time.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like the high school girl, and then when they were talking to like the guy standing at the painting or the picture, it just seemed, like a bit at odds. And then the Joey Lauren Adams character kind of comes into it, and I'm like, does she know TS's girlfriend, or does they know Shannon Doherty, or does Shannon Doherty and TS's girlfriend know each other? Like, how do everybody fit together? It never really made sense to me.
Okay. That's very interesting, because that's actually not a side of the film I've ever thought about. But you've made me rethink it. I like that. It's good.
Yeah, I never quite got it. But, there's a lot of, like, fun little, like you said, for people who are into pop culture, it's got a lot of funny things you can go back and watch now, especially now that all those things are really in the mainstream now. But as a movie, it just felt pretty flat. But I think what they were trying to do is they were trying to raunch it up by making it more like a Porky's kind of movie.
Yeah, so it's he had referred to it as, trying to make his version of Porky's.
And the studio were trying to like make it more raunchy, put some boobs in there, make it sexier.
Yeah, and I think those boob scenes or that sort of like the slapstickiness of Jay and Silent Bob, I think was really out of place. It really doesn't fit with what Jay and Silent Bob become. And you can sort of feel those influences from the studio being like, you need to make them like this.
Yeah. make it wackier or
yeah.
get them to do like slapstick Warner Brothers comedy, and it didn't fit with like a you know, grounded kind of talking drama comedy to like these outright set piece wackiness.
Mm. But yeah, so but it does sort of lay the foundations of Jay and Silent Bob, because they are sort of, you know, limited in the first one. You know, Jason Mewes, if you look at Jason Mewes in Clerks and look at him in Mallrats, he leaps and bounds in terms of acting. Originally, I think there was under the impression that Seth Green was ready to be cast as Jay instead of Jay.
Yeah, or Breckenmeyer as well.
Yeah, so, you know, he had to step his game up, otherwise he was going to be replaced in a second. And imagine Jay if he wasn't Jay.
But it is amazing that Kevin Smith has, through all his movies, kind of kept that group of friends that he had in the first movie, Clerks, and that the studios would allow him to continue using them, like Walt Flanagan and Brian Johnson. And
well, he had to fight for that. There was a bit of a fight to keep them in. But then this obviously, this even in terms of actors returning, like next week when we take a look at Chasing Amy and Dogma, you'll see the return of Jason Lee. You'll see the return of Ben Affleck and Joey Lauren Adams. And yeah, it's like he does have a very close-knit team that he'd like to work with.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess it goes to show how much of a nice guy he is, or how well they work together and how much trust they've got in him. Like, especially with Ben Affleck going to Chasing Amy, which we'll talk about next week, of course, and what that did for his career and, you know, the respectability that he got out of that could go on to Good Will Hunting and things like that.
Mm. But yeah, so yeah, I think that was a nice way to sort of to take a look at obviously the first two films, you know, with Alice. As Alice said, you love Clerks, but you found, you know, Mallrats very divisive in comparison. It's interesting.
Mm, yeah.
Do you have anything else to explain to add about Mallrats, or just flat out didn't like it? Simple as that.
Yeah, wish to never talk about it or watch it again. Yeah.
A very strong reaction. But
I read about a sequel. What the hell?
Yeah, Mallrats, which is scheduled to start filming very soon.
Crazy.
Well, that's it. Anything can be made into a sequel at these rates. Beautiful. But as we said, so next week we'll be taking a look at Chasing Amy and Dogma. Now, I think we'll be right back into it, Alistair, with Chasing Amy. It's a bit of more of a return to his roots, sort of that indie side of things. This movie is just well loved. It's a lovely, lovely movie. Dogma was his first attempt at sort of a big blockbustery thing with big action scenes. But one thing that you find in Clerks, you find in Mallrats, you find in all his films, his very, very unique voice. So be sure to tune in next week when we break down those two movies as well. And if you like what we do, you can find us, as we said, at novastream.com.au. You can find Alistair, you can find Dylan at the DC Domination Show on there, where they talk about all DC-related properties. Dylan will also be on Marvelous, and you can listen to me at The Pop Culturist, a weekly radio show where we break down things, all pop culture, and you can listen to us at Novastream as well. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Alistair. Thank you very much for coming on, Dylan.
Thank you.
And but until then, I'm Ryan. We'll see you next week.